Well, what does jazz have to do with our next guest? What does jazz have to do with children's books? Today's guest is going to answer those questions for us. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today is Erwin Chusid. He is the editor of JimFlora.com, a writer, a radio personality, a cultural historian, and he wrote the introduction for the 2017 reprint of Jim Flora's children's book. It's a magnificent book. It's called Grandpa's Ghost Stories. And we'll talk today about how Flora's work as an album cover artist for Columbia Records influenced his children's books. We'll learn some more about the spooky creatures in his book, Grandpa's Ghost Stories. And maybe you've read some of Flora's books. Are you a fan of his artwork? We'd love to hear from you. You can join in by calling us at 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Erwin Chusid, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome. You forgot to refer to Flora's Grandpa's Ghost Stories as creepy.
They are indeed creepy. Oh, my goodness me. I so enjoyed reading that book. And I was really happy that you had done a foreword to it because I didn't, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know anything about James Flora.
Well, up until 1998, that would have made two of us. I didn't grow up with these books. I had never heard of James Flora, or Jim, as he came to be known. Was there a next question, or you want me to just continue?
Well, I was going to ask you to give us the back. He's such an interesting guy.
Oh, yeah. And his art is fascinating. It's wide-ranging. It is so wide-ranging that I can't claim to be a fan of all of it, but there's just so much. And that would apply to any artist that I'm a fan of. There's always going to be part of their body of work that I'm less a fan of. I can't think of a single artist where I would like everything they ever painted, recorded, sang, or anything. But there's enough that I love about Flora that made me want to commit some professional time to reestablishing his legacy and in some ways reinventing his reputation.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you, he's got such an interesting history with meeting his wife and their family and their time in Mexico. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, he started in Belle Fountain, Ohio, a tiny little town. More horses than cars, he said at the time he was born in 1914. Grew up there and showed some early indications, some artistic ability. There was one of these things, what was it called, back in the 20s or before, where they used to take a quack scientist and have them put their hands on a child's head and determine, based on the contours of the skull, what they were going to develop into as an adult. So they did that to Flora, and they determined at a very young age that he was going to be a commercial artist. And he didn't even know what that meant. He, in the 30s, he wanted to be an architect, fascinated with architecture, and it was a lifelong fixation of his, and it's reflected in a lot of his art. He went to Boston around 1933 on a scholarship for the Boston Architectural League. But it was the Depression. He was broke. And he was working in a diner or something as a dishwasher, a busboy, whatever. Very long hours, very low pay. And he was so fatigued after working there that he couldn't make the classes. And eventually they rescinded the scholarship. So in 1933 or 34, he went back to Belle Fountain with $8 in his pocket, very disappointed that he wasn't going to study architecture. And he embarked on the study of art at the Art Academy of Cincinnati. He was there from 1935 to 1939, at which point he was certified. I haven't found any reference to him graduating.
Yeah.
He was certified. While he was there, he met his future wife, Jane Sinnickson. She was also an artist. She was also a student. And in Flora's own recollections, she was a better fine artist than he was. So he decided to go lowbrow. And that is reflected in the evolution of his work. There are some works by Flora when he was at the Art Academy in the late 30s. Very serious-looking portraiture. Very detailed, realistic, impressive, really meticulously rendered. But then there's also this wacky stuff, this silly stuff, this profane stuff, this cartoonish stuff. And that became the direction he went in. I have found very little after he left the Academy that looks like anything like a realistic painting, at least until his maritime art in the 1980s. He started doing things that sort of resembled cartoons. Now, he didn't do comic strips, and he didn't do cartoons. It was just the style. It was very, it was caricature. But he also was very fond, and this is reflected early on in his paintings, his works on paper, his illustrations, his commercial illustrations, where he was very fond of extra eyeballs and what I refer to as bonus limbs, you know, and not necessarily an even number. There were all sorts of figures with five legs and three eyes and seven arms. So this was something he started doing. Now, do you have any questions, or I can just roll on here?
Well, I'm so intrigued. As I was thinking about it, I was thinking about some of the digital games like Pac-Man, and I was thinking of some of the Disney movies, the scary ones, and I'm blanking on the name of the movie that I'm trying to remember here, but the drawings or the characters in those really resemble some of the things in his book Grandpa's Ghost Stories or some of his other artwork.
You know, I can't connect the dots between Flora and his influence on any other artist. I'm not saying there was no influence. There's only one artist where I can directly connect the dots, other than later artists, contemporaries of his, Gene Deitch. They were friends, and they influenced each other. Gene Deitch did the jazz, oh, God, it was called The Record Collector. It was a series of jazz record publications, and he was doing spot illustrations and covers, and they look kind of Flora-esque, and some of the work Flora was doing then looks kind of Deitchian, whatever, and they did become buddies, lifelong buddies, just great friends, a mutual admiration society. But what Flora was doing, he was back in Cincinnati, struggling as a commercial artist. This would have been in the early 40s. I think he did some work for Procter & Gamble, the Union Central Life Insurance Company, a couple of department stores, but he was struggling. And when I say Procter & Gamble, he didn't work for them. He just got a couple of assignments here and there. And I've never even seen any artifacts from those assignments. I've contacted Procter & Gamble, and they have nothing in their archives. His name might not have even been attached to the illustrations he did. Just a freelancer, you know, did some crazy caricatures for them for a brochure, perhaps. So he was a jazz fan. Here comes the jazz. Flora was a big jazz fan and a classical fan, and he used to go, back when he was in Ohio, go and see the jazz bands that were coming through. He'd go to the dances, he'd go to the concerts, he'd go to the clubs. He loved jazz and classical music. He's starting to collect records in the early 40s, and Columbia's putting out these great jazz records, but he feels they're really not promoting them very well. He's finding out about them, but he figures they could probably do a better business, and he's the guy to help them. So he writes a letter to to Alex Steinweiss, who was the art director at Columbia in 1942. Alex Steinweiss is the man who invented the illustrated album cover.
And at that, at this moment, I'm going to ask you to hold off for a minute, Irwin, because we need to take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. We'll be back and we'll learn some more about the work of Jim Flora after the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. Excited to have with us Irwin Shusid. He is with us to talk about the life and work of the late children's book author, James Flora. Today we're looking at Flora's book, Grandpa's Ghost Stories. The book was originally published in 1978, but was reprinted for the first time this year with an introduction written by today's guest. And we'll also talk about Flora's life and career as an artist. We've been doing that and really enjoying it. You may have a favorite spooky story from your childhood. What about a favorite artist and writer? Maybe you've enjoyed Flora's books or artwork. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And Irwin, you were talking, as we broke for news, about Jim Flora's becoming an illustrator of album covers.
He was a jazz enthusiast, as I had mentioned, and he was living back in Cincinnati, struggling as a freelance commercial illustrator. He had just gotten married to Jane, and he wrote this letter to Alex Steinweiss. Now, Alex Steinweiss was the art director at Columbia, then based in Connecticut, it's Columbia Records. And Steinweiss, I'd mentioned, starting to say, had invented the illustrated album cover. Before 1939, album covers had kind of bland covers, and they weren't displayed in record shops with the cover out because they all looked pretty much the same, except maybe for the color. But the spine is what they would display, like on a bookshelf. You'd look at the spine and say, oh, this is the record I'm looking for. Here's Fats Waller, here's Duke Ellington, here's Tchaikovsky, whatever. That's how they sold records. Steinweiss got the idea, let's put something on the front cover. Let's put a painting on there. Let's put an illustration. Let's put this something colorful and exciting and vibrant and eye-catching. And that's what they started doing around 1939, and Columbia's sales skyrocketed. So Steinweiss became the golden boy.
Yeah.
The art director. Flora writes to him and says, you're putting out all these jazz records, but you're really not doing a very good job of promoting them. I've got some ideas, and here they are. He had devised six little pamphlets, little miniature pamphlets, which he put some mock-up illustrations in and some dummy text. They exist. We have them. This was in 1941. He mailed them to Steinweiss. Steinweiss was impressed, but he didn't hire Flora right away. He just said, I kind of like your ideas here, young fellow. But a year later, they wrote back to Flora and offered him a job working in the Columbia Art Department at the staggering sum of $55 a week. Maybe it was $55 a month, come to think of it. Whatever it was, it doesn't sound like much, but it was enough for Flora to live on. So he and Jane moved to Connecticut in 1942. Now, they had no children at this time, and he's not thinking of doing children's books. So he goes to work in the art department. A year later, 1943, Steinweiss goes into the Army. It's World War II, and he goes into the Navy, and to replace him, they promote Flora to art director. Flora was 4F. He had black spots on his lungs from having shoveled coal in railroad yards during the Depression. So Flora became the art director in 1943, and he completely revolutionized how music was marketed and promoted and publicized with his illustrations, which at this point were very much in the caricature genre. Everything was completely overdone. in a wonderful cartoonish way. Even the classical music illustrations were done this way. He did these little booklets called Coda, C-O-D-A, strictly about the classical line, but with fabulous illustrations in them. They constitute ephemera. They were not kept. They were monthlies. They were sent to record stores and eventually thrown out. So they're very collectible now, and I've got an almost complete set. They're wonderful. And I think he wrote them as well, because he was a good writer, and he had a whimsical sense of humor, and that's reflected in the text on these. They were pretty much his baby. He was doing ads, and he was doing circulars, all sorts of internal things. Then in 1945, they promoted him to marketing director. Maybe promotions director, whatever it was, he was no longer head of the art department, and he hated it. They turned him into a bureaucrat, or tried to. He was attending meetings, flying to conventions, and, you know, drawing up budgets, and he didn't do that. He wanted to create art. His replacement was a guy named Robert Miller Jones, Robert M. Jones, very famous designer and illustrator for a number of labels. He became Flora's replacement, and they became buddies, and in 1947, Jones started jobbing out to Flora album covers for jazz releases. And they are absolute classics of the genre of illustrated album cover art from the late 40s. Louis Armstrong, Gene Krupa, Tommy Dorsey, Kid Ory, just striking caricatures of... skin tints like bedspread patterns. And again, bonus limbs. I think he gave Gene Krupa six legs.
But now, how did he go from there to children's books?
Well, okay, I was about to digress back to children's books. In 1943, Jim and Jane had their first child, Russi, a daughter. Well, by 1945, 46, it's hard to tell, because these things are undated. Flora started doing drafts of children's books. He never got very far with them. Obviously, he had lots of other responsibilities, but this was something that seemed to interest him. I think there are three or four children's book drafts, and they're very skeletal. Some illustrations, a little bit of text, a storyline that starts to develop, it doesn't get very far, but it seems these were set aside. Perhaps they were pitched somewhere. We just don't know. There's nothing in the files that indicate any progress was made with them or that he intended to pursue a career as a children's book author-illustrator. He continued as this commercial artist working for Columbia Records, started doing magazine illustration on the side, because, again, in the late 40s, when Columbia tried to turn him into a bureaucrat, he wanted to be an artist. That's all he wanted to do. So he started accepting assignments from Mademoiselle for a number of other publications, strictly doing them as a freelancer while having a full-time job at Columbia. Finally, in 1950, he just couldn't stand it anymore. He'd just drawn up one too many budgets, attended one too many conventions, and sat around one too many business tables, and he quit. And he and his wife, Jane, and by then two children, Russi and Joel. Joel was born in 1947. They just packed up their Hudson sedan and drove to Mexico from Connecticut. And they stayed in Mexico for about 15 months, and all they did was create art. And everything that I've seen from Flora's Mexico period is just some of the top-tier Flora work. And it is bizarre. Not really children-friendly, either. Just strange. Lots of jagged lines, a little bit of violence here and there, some sexuality, adult themes, but in this absurd, surrealistic, caricatured style that he was becoming known for. And by the way, wherever Flora went, he made friends. Everybody I've spoken to who knew Jim, who worked with him, neighbors, family members, everybody, they all loved him. And he was a very hardworking artist. He knew that he was raising a family. He had a house in the suburbs, mortgage to pay, bills to pay. He applied himself. He loved creating art, and he was never ashamed of selling that art, of being a commercial artist. as that as the contours of his head predicted he would become. So after 15 months in Mexico, they decided, they got two small kids, they got to go to school, so we're going to go back to Connecticut. They went back to Connecticut in 1951, and he immediately got an assignment doing a cover for Fortune magazine, and began a very busy career as a commercial illustrator from that point on. Sports Illustrated, Life magazine, Parade magazine, Fortune, Mademoiselle, I mean, just so many magazines. Flora was a go-to artist for countless magazines. Well, it's 1952, and his old buddy from Columbia, Robert Martin Jones, had left Columbia, was now at RCA Victor. They remained close friends, and Jones reached out to Flora, probably Flora reached out to Jones and said, hey, I'm back in town, I'm freelancing, you got any work for me? So from 1953, for about the next 5 years, Jones started jobbing out RCA Victor album covers to Flora. And these, again, are just astonishing in the imaginative approach that Flora used to illustrate album covers. They're all over eBay. Just go looking for Jim Flora or James Flora, RCA Victor album covers. I've done two books that have compiled these album covers. So now you want to know about the children's books again.
Yeah, he used to tell his kids stories in the evening.
Yeah, well, by 1954, 55, he had five children. They loved having a big family. So, and he was working at home. He never worked in an office. He was working at home as a freelancer, had the kids around. And, yeah, he'd put them to bed at night and tell them stories. And he knew that if they told him to retell a story, that it was probably a good one. Well, he still wasn't sure he wanted to do children's books, and he wasn't doing children's books. He was approached by Margaret McElderry. Margaret McElderry is one of the legendary children's books editors. She was working for Harcourt Brace at the time. You can look up Margaret McElderry, and she was a very powerful figure, very influential, very encouraging to countless children's books authors and illustrators. She approached Flora and said, you've got a children's book in you. And Flora wasn't sure he could do it, because he'd never written a book. He was a visual artist. And she told him to try. And he envisioned this story that eventually was published as The Fabulous Firework Family, about a family that he had known in Mexico who sold fireworks, and sort of some escapades that happened when fireworks went awry at a town festival. Very colorful book, beautifully illustrated and written. That was published in 1955, and it was a huge success. And McElderry said, don't stop there. So in 1957, he did The Day the Cow Sneezed, which was reprinted by Enchanted Lion Books about 5 years ago. Again, the art is just classic Flora, and it's a mischievous book, as all Flora books are, as a lot of Flora art is, mischievous. That's why I called my first Flora book The Mischievous Art of Jim Flora. In fact, all the titles reflect the qualities that you find in Jim's best art. I'm trying to remember. One is the curiously sinister art of Jim Flora. There's the mischievous art. There is the sweetly diabolic art of Jim Flora. And the last one is the hi-fi. I think it's the high-fidelity art of Jim Flora, which specifically is the music-related images of Flora. Some of the children's books illustrations are in the anthologies we've done for Fantagraphics. There are also drafts from some of the children's books, which are fascinating, because they were published, the print process back then was overlays. You did various layers to indicate color for the printer. And the overlays, when they're separated, are really fascinating as standalone works of art, because there's a lot that's missing from them. So they're sort of mysterious looking. We've published some of those in the book.
And Grandpa's Ghost Stories, this book it's like three stories in one. It's about the Bag of Old Bones, the Warty Witch, or the Case of the Warty, or the Cave of the Warty Witch, I think it was, and then the House of the Ghost, Ghastly Ghost. I read that book. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
They're threaded together. There's continuity there.
Yeah.
It involves a thunderstorm where this child is very, very scared, and he jumps into his grandpa's lap and says, "Oh, we're going to die, we're going to die." Grandma says, this is nothing compared to an escapade I once had. "Oh, really?" And grandpa's like, I can't tell you. It was just too scary. It would scare the pants off you. No, grandpa, tell me. And grandpa unfurls this story. And one story leads into the next, and each one is supposed to be a little scarier than the one before it. And he sort of teases the grandchild. What came next was even worse, but you don't want to hear that because it's show. Oh, no, please, Grandpa, tell me what happened next. So the story unfurls that way. There's a continuity to it. I was going to spoil the ending, but I won't. However, along the way, there's a lot of strange things that happen, children getting cooked and eaten. It's gruesome.
And the art in the book is fantastic.
Flora, as I said, had done all these sort of ghoulish, creepy, sinister figures for years. His children's books were starting to become, I thought, kind of tame in their style throughout the late 60s and early 70s. And it seems like at some point he just decided, I got a notebook full of all these creepy creatures and monsters, and I just got to do something with them. So it's like he just emptied out his sketchbook and put all these creepy-looking figures in one book, Grandpa's Ghost Stories, and sort of the mischievous artist emerged again in a very vivid way in Grandpa's Ghost Stories. And I think that's one reason why it seems to be the one Flora's works of juvenile literature that so many people love and were hoping would someday be reprinted.
And that book, before it was reprinted, you could find copies once in a while, but they were very expensive.
They were going for $150, $200, depending upon the condition they were in. And it was very difficult to find clean copies. Why? Because these were children's books. And what do kids do with a book they love? They read it again and again. Oh, they got peanut butter and jelly on their fingers. So what? Just pages stick together. Let's rip them apart. Sleep with the book, drop it in the corner, bring it outside. It falls in the mud. These books were read and they were loved. And in the course of that happening, a little bit of wear and tear here and there.
Yeah, for sure. And I have to tell you that I can see why that particular book was I don't know if endearing is the right word, but it was so popular because they're great stories.
I was an adult when I first read it, and I just want to say, I want to boast, I was not scared.
No?
I was not scared. I was not scared when I read the book as an adult. That's what I'm saying. Do you understand what I'm saying? No, I wasn't scared. It didn't frighten me, is what I'm saying, Larry. It didn't frighten me. Not at all much.
It is so wonderful to have this book reprinted and to have... I'm going to have fun with my copy of it for sure. I'm thinking of sharing it with at one of my child's schools, our previous school, because I think it would be a wonderful story. And I'm not sure about the age of it. The age of the people who might read it or listen to the stories could be a little scary for youngsters.
I hope they can take it. I think they can. I also have some breaking news here.
Yeah?
Now, I call it Feral House Press, but they told me it's Feral House Press. And I looked up on the internet, and it's Feral. And they said, maybe it's an East Coast thing, but it's Feral. And over here on the West Coast, it's Feral. How do you pronounce it?
I would say feral.
You're sort of in the middle. Feral. It's sort of feral, feral, feral. Okay, anyway, they want to reprint another Flora, creepy Flora children's book, Grandpa's Witched Up Christmas. Which was, I believe, Flora's final book, which was 1982. I don't know how much time we have here, but I wanted to mention one more thing about Margaret McElderry.
Yeah.
Got a minute?
Yeah.
Well, Margaret McElderry worked at Harcourt Brace until, I think, sometime in 1976 or so, 75. And as I said, she was just a powerhouse as a children's book editor. Very famous, very well known, incredibly well respected. Her advice was always sought after. At some point, I think it was around 1972 now that I think about it, she had done 11 books with Flora at Harcourt Brace. Harcourt Brace decided she was too old. This is to be a children's book editor, and she was like, they just decided, we want to get someone younger in here, so we're letting you go after I don't know how many decades of being our best children's book editor. They let her go. She immediately received six offers, six other publishing houses, to not just to come over and work for us, but to start your own imprint. And she went over to Athenaeum and became an editor there. And one of her first acts as an editor at Athenaeum was to tell Jim Flora, you're coming with me. So Flora left Harcourt Brace. He was under no contractual obligation to stay with them. It was one book at a time. He went over to Athenaeum, and he worked with Margaret McElderry on six more books, a total of 17 books, and Margaret McElderry was the editor on all 17 of them. So the last one was in 1982. By then, Flora's children were grown and out of the house. He no longer had an at-home demographic focus group for his books. And by then,
it was done. And we're done, actually, Irwin. Oh, my goodness. It has been so much fun talking with you today. And your site again?
JimFlora.com.
JimFlora.com. Great fun talking with him. And the book we were talking really about Jim Flora's life. And the book that I so loved was Grandpa's Ghost Stories. But go to JimFlora.com and you'll learn some more. Thank you very much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store.